you don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I just want to make you really mad with my Florence and the Machine impression. Do you want to hear it?
No.
Wait, I need to find a tambourine somewhere. Do I have like a bag of beans I can grab?
Well, he fucked me in the bathroom. He fucked me in the ass.
Okay, you're just trolling me live on our podcast.
I'm Florence and the Machine. I love trans people.
Today we are talking about something that honestly has been a very long time coming.
Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, Lord of the Rings was easily top five most formative pieces of culture to Rose and I's childhoods. Maybe more so important to Rose today than it is to me today. However, it is something that we have effectively schooled each other on. You know, time and time again.
And it is something that you, the virgins, have asked time and time again for us to talk about. So,
and here we are.
For those reasons, today we are talking about Lord of the Rings, the books, the movies, the cultural phenomenon, the whole extended universe, because this is Like a Virgin, the show where we give yesterday's pop culture today's takes. I am Rose Domu, your resident fool of a toque.
And I am Fran Tirado, your local Galadriel. And in the words of a wise man, fly, you fools.
How the hell are ya?
So good. So real. So real. As the Black Eyed Peas would say, both so real and surreal.
We have been truly having a Black Eyed Peas spring. And I think it's going to roll over into a Black Eyed Peas summer and
for sure
fall and winter as well.
Wait, can we discuss this? Because like all of a sudden I had a few friends that started listening to it again around the same time that I was revisiting Monkey Business, which, as I've said on the pod before, was one of the first albums I ever purchased with my own money, along with Love Angel Music Baby. And then there was that Black Eyed Peas SNL sketch. And I was like, is there a Zaunce happening?
I think they truly have an unshakable grip on all of our necks. And
yeah.
I love that for them.
Pump It is an untouchable bop. Like, an opener to an album, like, it still, like, holds all the way up. Like, it doesn't even feel dated. It feels amazing.
It feels current. It could be. It's yesterday, today, tomorrow.
Yeah. Just for context, like we were like in Joshua Tree, like listening to this whole album. And then the interlude from My Humps played where they go, surreal, surreal. And we were like stoned. We were like, are they saying so real or are they saying
surreal. And that's the layers of the Black Eyed Peas. It's
an enigma. I also, there was a really great moment at the end of our trip where you, Ash, Justin, and I were hugging and just started spontaneously singing No Lies.
No.
It's really beautiful.
Another standout from that album was the bridge that I completely forgot about of Pump It, where they go, damn, damn, damn.
Damn. I'm not going to start singing because then you'll start talking about how I always sing on this podcast.
Wait, speaking of singing, I did listen to the new Florence and the Machine album in preparation for today.
Okay, I'm not excited to hear your take on it because I feel like it's going to be negative.
Are you saying, maybe you're projecting because you also did not like the album as much as you would have.
No, I do love it, but I know that you hate me and want me to suffer.
Is that the dynamic? So here's the thing. I've already said before, Florence was, like, I'm an OG Florence stan. There was really not a lot to latch onto with this album, I felt. I really liked Daffodil. I love Free. Is it Free, the one that's kind of like thumpy and quick?
Free was the last single she released before the album came out.
Free is my favorite song. But like when Florence arrived on the music scene, she was a novelty. And there was nothing that sounded like her. And it was just immediately ingenious. And now I feel like she's made this album three times. And I wish that there was something more like the song Free that would have changed her pace or made it seem like more than sensual chamber music for people that used to have Tumblr. You know what I mean?
I see merit in that critique. Okay. I'm going to validate that. I do think that Florence makes a very specific kind of music. I am very dialed into it. And always love it. And I think there's some really beautiful songs on this album. Like, I really loved the singles she put out since the album came out. Dream Girl Evil is one I've been listening to a lot. I really like Cassandra. I really like Girls Against God. But yeah, I think her last few records, I think especially the last one, Highest Hope, have been a lot quieter and more introspective, and like I do think there are some bangers on this album, but yes, it's very different. I love it. I love Florence. I love how committed she is to her aesthetic, her sound, to making the kind of music she makes. I will say, and like I don't think this is a good excuse when you're talking about music, but seeing her live is such a transcendent experience. And I did see her when she was touring Highest Hope, and even with a record, and that is probably my least favorite of her albums, but even still, seeing the songs live, they just become completely transcendent, and she is such a captivating performer, and I just love her. I love the album. I will defend her until the end of time.
Yeah.
But I do agree that, you know, there was a couple years ago, I think after Ceremonials, she said that she wanted to make like an electronic dance album.
Oh.
And that never happened. I think the closest we ever got to it was when she did that song Sweet Nothing with Calvary.
Oh, I love.
Which I love. I'm obsessed
so
with. I do think it might be good for her at some point to do, like kind of one-off experimental album that might sort of like just change things up for her and probably will infuse her music going forward with kind of different vibes. But all that to be said, I really like Dance Fever. I would love to see her tour this album because I think it would just, hearing the songs in that context would bring them even more to life for me than they are now. And it's an album that I certainly will spend a lot more time with and have even since it came out. I've been listening to it a lot. When I was in New York this week, I was listening to a lot when I was walking around Brooklyn, and it's just like really beautiful. I love it, and I will kill you for not liking it.
So here's the thing. It's not that I'm even like criticizing her. I mean, okay, I will say for an album called Dance Fever, there were not a lot of dance songs, okay?
There are like three. It's just
There are like three, first of all. Second of all,
But like you can, you slow dance.
Oh, you know, girl, dance does you not are have stretching. To be, she's reaching, dance, Your Honor. Fran, she's reaching.
No, but Fran, this is the thing. All you listen to are fucking remixes of songs.
That's not true.
And not, everything is going to be something like you hear out at
I
a club.
I love remixes, but I do not listen to majority remixes. I think that honestly, the way I really do feel about Florence is that she was like my, like in my, the top tier of music artists that I adored for a really long time in my Tumblr era. And I think that because she has not changed, but my taste has changed, that her music, which is sonically gorgeous and still of its own kind, and just as you said, like unlike anything out there still, is something that I, on a taste level, have maybe outgrown. But I also feel like music artists, especially women in music, like shouldn't have to reinvent themselves over and over again. Like there are women like Lana or even Adele, honestly, although I do think Adele's last album was very different, like that can do the same thing over and over again and they'll always have their base. And I think that that is just something that, you know, I really honor. And you are someone who, like, your taste level is essentially, you know, a pantheon of Caucasian yodelers with Lexapro prescriptions that you idolize, you know, the Fiona Apple, Alanis, Kate Bush, Florence and the Machine. There's one more in there.
Taylor
doesn't yodel as much.
I mean, this is all not untrue, but I do take umbrage with the idea that Florence hasn't changed because I think her songwriting has gotten so much so much both sharper and softer. Like I think she, if you really take the time and really listen, the lyrics are so beautiful and her voice is still just haunting. She is a siren, she is a banshee, she is the moment for me still.
Did you notice, this is a stupid tangent, but did you notice that like in the little like Spotify album art, Florence and the Machine is abbreviated to FTM? FTM?
Yeah. Girl, you think is I didn't that, that?
So do you think she know? Do you think anyone's told her that? Do you think it's is Florence it is it FTM so, music?
Florence has so many trans friends. She's like Good Judy's with Sean Fay, Tommy Dorfman. Someone definitely was like, Amru. Oh my God, love that you're trans mask now.
Okay, I literally like, how do we become, you know, among the echelon of Florence's trans friends? Like how do we accomplish this? Do you think?
I don't know. I have been wondering about this for a while, but I actually don't think I could ever meet her because she is, and this is so gay to say, she's too important to me.
I would never want to meet Cher because like I don't want Cher to like ruin Cher for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, some idols you just shouldn't meet. Although I have met Gaga and it was a fun interaction.
Okay, wait. I didn't even ask you about your New York trip. How did it go?
It was really good to be in New York. It was also weird. It was disgusting the whole time I was there. It's probably like the most humid weekend of the year. So it was horrible for like looking cute, but it was good. It weirdly ended up, well, okay. So peeling back the curtain for all the virgins for Christmas, Fran got me the very sweet gift of 2 tickets to see New York City Center's Encore's production of Into the
Which
Woods.
Which is your favorite?
Which was
Sondheim.
It's my
Tide.
Favorite, like Tide with Sweeney Todd. But Into the Woods does kind of like eke out a little bit forward, and it was incredible. First of all, the tickets were amazing. Thank you so much. I truly, it was such a thoughtful gift and such an amazing experience.
Oh,
I got to go with my best friend Ryan. It was great. The production was great. It's like very simple. Orchestra was on stage, like very minimal staging. Everyone was incredible. Heather, who originated the role of Aida in Aida, was so fucking good as the witch. Her Last Midnight gave me chills. Sarah Bareilles, I like am not a huge Sarah Bareilles stan. She was so fucking good. Her voice is like butter. Her tone is so pure. Everything she does is effortless. And the baker's wife really is like the sleeper hit role of that show. I think she has some of the surprisingly memorable moments of the show. Neil Patrick Harris was really good too. The one thing that is bad about this production, and I think it's transferring to Broadway. That's what the like Broadway.com message boards are saying, according to Ryan. So at the end of the show, the most moving song in the show for me is the finale, Children Will Listen. So the finale is happening. I'm sobbing. And then, like, the emotional crux of this finale, the house lights come on and a, like, community theater group walks out into the aisles to sing the end of the finale song with the cast. I have never been taken out of a moment so abruptly as
Not the house lights. That's so jarring.
Because, yes, it was incredibly jarring. I went from sobbing to, like, confused so quickly. It was such a weird choice. And actually, my brother had seen the show already and the night before had said to me, there's something that happens in the show that I really didn't like. I'm very interested to hear what your take on it is. I won't spoil it for you. And it was this, obviously. It just really took you out of the moment. It really cut the, like, the effectiveness of the emotional core of that song off in a really unfortunate way and undercut what the cast was doing on stage. And, like, you know, like, the people from this community theater, they're really going for it. Like, standing in the aisles, they're, like, singing along and, like, pointing and stuff. And it was just not good, not right. No. I hope if it goes to Broadway, they won't do it. I mean, I'm sure it won't because they would have to pay those people. And, like, that just won't happen at every performance. But, yeah, other than that, it was wonderful. I had a great time. So, thank you again, friend. So, okay. Fuck theater. Let's talk about the real show of the week, which was the premiere of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills season 12. Obviously, a premiere episode that was very centered on one thing that we all knew would.
I totally forgot.
Dorit and PK's house getting broken into, and Dorit getting held at gunpoint.
And honestly, it feels like the rest of the season's going to be around, like, their PTSD.
Oh, yeah. The ramifications, you know, will be felt throughout the rest of the season. The moment that was the most chilling for me was at the end when she was sitting outside alone going, I'm fine.
Oh, my God.
People are still saying that the burglary was fake. I, after seeing this episode, do not believe
That's it.
Horrible. Like, seeing PK crying about not being there. Wait, the most horrible and also entertaining moment of the episode was Sutton talking to Kyle and being a complete sociopath.
No other word for it. And that's, like, in a very exact usage, like a sociopathic level of self-involvement.
Absolutely no empathy.
Like, it doesn't even matter how it was edited. There's no way it to have been edited for it. It was bad.
Horrible person.
Horrible person.
Great reality TV character.
I hate Sutton. I hate her so much.
And you can be both. You can be both. And actually, sometimes they're required to go together.
And every season, I unfortunately have to very toxically rank them. And I really don't know where Sutton's going to land for me because I hate Sutton. And yet she really is endlessly entertaining because she's so horrible. I have to say, like, I think Dorit's thing, I'm, like, honestly horrified to find out that people are, like, doubted that it was ever real. Like,
oh, well,
I don't
that
even
was
know.
The thing everyone was saying when the news broke. I think because of the timing of it, it happened the day before they were supposed to start filming.
Oh, God.
But I just think I could see Sutton staging her own robbery, but I don't think so.
I just don't, that would never be my immediate reaction, but I don't actually know anybody that felt that way, so it must be, like, a lot of online sentiment. But, like, I feel like it's reminding me, honestly, of season 2, where they're dealing with an extremely real, painful, traumatic event that has been reality TV-ified, and it's going to be hard to watch.
Yes, I actually, on the plane to New York, I hadn't watched the premiere yet, but I was flying JetBlue there and they had live TV and there was a Beverly Hills marathon happening on Bravo. So I tuned in for a little bit until my Xanax kicked in. And it was season two, the episode where they're at Maurizio's birthday dinner. They go to Hawaii for his birthday. Right. And Kim misses the plane. And then she and her boyfriend show up late. And I just, it made
her
me so
horrible, horrible
early,
boyfriend.
For early Beverly
Hills. That was
Hills.
One of Mauricio's golden moments where he literally called her on her bullshit. He was just like, no, like, you were late. And this is disrespectful. And I just want...
We need to get Kim back. We need Kim back on the show. There is nothing like a season of Real Housewives when people are related and there is real family drama. That's why New Jersey is still elite in many
ways. I will be watching New Jersey the next time I get the stomach flu. I have to say that as far as just to go back to the Sutton thing... I really, really, really hate Kyle when she is so spineless in an interaction like that to be kind of unable to really say what's wrong with what's going on.
Because if you, my extremely good friend, acted like that to me,
I would
like slap you. I would say you.
I'd be like,
girl,
what
the fuck is wrong with you?
I'd be like, you are lucky there aren't other people here right now.
Get out of my transgender home.
Anyways, I was just like, it's moments like that where I have never really loved Kyle as a protagonist for the entire franchise. But I really need her to like grow a spine because like right now it's just like not cutting it.
She won't. She never will. She hasn't yet.
Unfortunately, I am back on Team Erica. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not proud of this fact.
I don't understand. Always been. You have gone on record saying that she's your favorite housewife.
She is no longer my favorite housewife, unfortunately. But I do think that there was a moment in the confessional where she was really trying to evade questions that the producer was asking her. And she was just like, they ended up like sharing what the producer was asking her because she was being so indignant. She was like, well, fucking duh. Like, and I just thought that was so iconic.
No, but she was also like, dodging questions about the Tom Girardi and like things being settled.
Right.
I don't think she's gonna
be my favorite from this season. I think the new villain, whatever her face is.
Oh, the new girl coming in who apparently I heard is rumored to have once like been somewhat involved with Jeffrey Epstein. In
oh, great.
Like she was a sort of a Ghislaine,
No.
Yeah.
I mean, cursed. Honestly, they probably all have affiliations with Jeffrey Epstein. Like, let's be real. Like, it's. But yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
But I think you all will need to get used to the fact that we will be probably discussing Beverly Hills weekly on this.
I don't
podcast.
Know about weekly,
and maybe we'll do a Housewives episode because I think that is one of the things that I did. Pressure you into like watching
you were the kind of thing to push me over the edge to start watching.
You're calling me a thing now.
I'm calling you a
thing. Okay, great.
No.
Virgins, it's been so fun engaging with you on Instagram. If you aren't already, please follow our burner, Finsta, alt, whatever, like a virgin for 2069.
We've been getting suggestions and I mean, not criticism yet, but like I would accept criticism in the DMs. I wouldn't necessarily, you know, incorporate it into anything I do or say, but I would love to hear what you have to say.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
How would an orc's dick even fit in a hobbit?
I think orc dicks must be really spiky.
As someone who has read a lot of Lord of the Rings fan fiction, I have spent a lot of time thinking about the anatomy of the different races of Middle Earth.
And
most of my preoccupation is with how would a hobbit hole take the dick of, say, an elf?
Not or hobbit hole.
Hobbit hole, yeah. Hobbitle has multiple meanings, honey.
We honestly need to, every time we, like, use terms, we need to, like, explain them for Phoebe. A hobbit, hobbithole is a double entendre. It's you do. Phoebe knows both definitions. Got it. Okay.
Do you really see yourself as a Galadriel?
Yeah. I mean, what else would I be? What do you see me as? This is a very important.
Okay.
Let's start here.
Okay. I think you are more of... I don't know that you're an elf.
Yeah, they're way too graceful. I think I'm probably a hobbit. I'm anxious. I can't get a lot done. I feel like I make a mess of things, but I'm ultimately chaotic good.
Yeah, hobbits are giving me, because of how much they love their things and they love food and revelry, they're giving me very Taurus energy. So I do think you are a hobbit.
The indulgences of hobbits and their 12 meals that they have a day is very Taurian behavior.
Yeah, second However, breakfast.
Honestly, I mean, let's take it back to...
And their little hobbit holes full of plants.
My hobbit hole is not filled with plants,
okay,
unfortunately.
Okay, so what of the Middle Earthian races do you think I am?
Well, then? I was actually going to ask you, okay, just to answer your question very quickly, I think it's going to be wizard.
Oh,
it's going to be wizard. And unfortunately, there are no women in the Lord of the Rings franchise, so I can't assign you like a...
Because I was almost going to say I could see myself as a dwarf.
But there are witches in the Tolkien universe. It just, they didn't appear. But I was going to ask you, growing up, when you were watching these movies or reading the books, did you supplant yourself on any specific character? Because I really feel that this is one of those unique entities where I really did not relate to any character.
No, same. I was an observer. I was very immersed in the world, but there was no, like, I'm Hermione. That's not what Lord of the Rings was for me.
Honestly, maybe a testament to, like, the artifice of relatability and the universal story and how, like, a lot of Hollywood execs always talk about, like, you need to be able to see yourself in this character and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that's actually bullshit. Like, Lord of the Rings had absolutely nothing to do with me. Even the humanity of these characters behind all the fantasy really didn't resonate with me at all. And yet, it's a fucking good story. You know?
Well, okay. So I want to know, what was your first experience with J.R.R. Tolkien's creations?
You know, my dad was a big C.S. Lewis fan. And then by default, our whole family was. And so, you know, we grew up with a lot of Narnia things. Reading books,
watching Narnia.
Or the places you'll go. And so by association, C.S. Lewis was best friends with Tolkien. I think that was something that my dad always talked about.
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe boots the house down.
Yes, exactly. And so I think by association, my dad tried to get me to read the Lord of the Rings books. I have ADHD probably, and so definitely couldn't finish any of them. But I definitely checked out the, do you remember the monster size compilation of the three books with the Ringwraith on the cover that they released in time for the movies?
Yep. I remember checking it well.
It was gorgeous. And I remember checking that out and trying to read it. But ultimately, the movies is what solidified my love for this franchise. And then through that, the visual companions, the merchandise, the extended editions, like the theatrical releases, like everything around the culture of Lord of the Rings was an obsession for my family and I.
Did you ever have the ring?
Unfortunately, I did.
And I absolutely did as well.
I had the nice one, girl, like the one from the catalog, like the official Lord of the Rings jewelry catalog that sold like the Elven Star and like the swords.
The merch that I had that was the most important to me was I had an Arwen action figure. It was a set. It was Arwen, who had a horse, Bilbo, and then the Ringwraith, also on a horse, from the scene where they chase Arwen and she goes through the river and does her little Caroline Polachek moment where she's like, nim, nim, shoo, da, 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 da. And then the water comes up and, yeah.
And it was one of my favorite scenes, definitely in that movie, if not the entire franchise.
I mean, the only scene with one of the three scenes featuring a woman.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Okay, but to answer the question I asked you, because you didn't ask me it back, my entry point into all things Tolkien was I received the book, The Hobbit, as a Hanukkah gift one year when I was, I want to say, 9 or 10.
Before the movies.
Before the movies. And even though before we started recording, you told me that you thought that I had never actually finished The Hobbit and hated it, which was very hurtful to me.
I'm sorry.
Because actually, it is definitely one of the defining books of my childhood. Mm. And I remember receiving it so vividly. And it's like such a root memory for me. And that's when I fell in love with it and started reading the books. And then the movies came out. And I was so obsessed with the movies. I had them all on DVD. Well, I had them on VHS first and then DVD. Every day for like a year, I would start Fellowship of the Ring when I got into bed. And that's what would like lull me to sleep.
Wow. Okay. I mean, the answer to this question might be obvious, but like what about the world of The Hobbit or just like Tolkien-esque kind of world building in general was so captivating to you?
Well, I think with The Hobbit itself, it is the way that the story is told. And I think some of that comes from part of the backstory of how The Hobbit was created. So, you know, obviously Lord of the Rings looms larger in the cultural consciousness than The Hobbit does. But The Hobbit is what was written first. And it wasn't actually written as a book. It was a story that J.R.R. Tolkien used to tell his kids, and then he turned it into a book. And that's why the book itself is so episodic. Like, every chapter is a new adventure that Bilbo goes on in which he learns something or finds something or, like, saves someone.
And in a very meta way, it's passed down through generations, through children, via an oral history.
Yes. And so that is what I immediately latched onto, was that kind of storytelling nature. I think my favorite part of the Hobbit books is the chapter with the trolls where
they get kidnapped.
Where the trolls kidnap the dwarves and Bilbo and Gandalf like outsmart them and they turn to stone at the end.
The premise of the Hobbit, for those that don't know, is Bilbo Baggins, who is the kind of father figure in the Lord of the Rings franchise that's kind of puts a lot of the plot in motion, basically leaves Hobbiton for the first time at kind of Gandalf's pressing, for the first time he meets Gandalf as well, to basically go and defeat Smaug the dragon.
It's to help Thorin Oakenshield, who is the king under the mountain, reclaim his kingdom,
right,
which has been usurped by Smaug the dragon.
And he and a company of 12 dwarves go travel to Smaug's lair to kind of reclaim it.
Yes. And then I was very much led into Lord of the Rings in a really organic way, because that is how Tolkien intended it to be. Mm-hmm. Because Lord of the Rings is, in many ways, you know, Tolkien was creating these stories for his children and his children were growing up. So then after he wrote The Hobbit, he then went on to create Lord of the Rings, which is obviously much more adult and you know, had to kind of go and like retcon a lot of what's in Lord of the Rings to make it fit into the universe. Because the thing is, in the books, like the ring that Bilbo finds, it's just another like narrative thing, like
device.
It's not like in when the ring comes into play in The Hobbit, it's not the ring of Lord of the Rings. Yeah. You know, it's just like a magical ring that turns him invisible.
Yeah.
And then in Lord of the Rings, you know, he decides, okay, this is actually going to be like, you know, the MacGuffin object that has all this power and that everyone wants and needs to be destroyed.
Yeah. And hobbits, I would also say, as a race, are an encapsulation of like a kind of fundamental theme in Tolkien's work, which is that heroism comes from the most unexpected places, and that you can doubt all you want the like power and ability of someone who doesn't look or feel or sound like a hero, someone who doesn't even want to be a hero, and yet here they are. And like, I think that in both The Hobbit and a little bit in The Lord of the Rings as well, they demonstrate basically Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, but like the refusal of the call is like a quintessential stage in Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. And in The Hobbit, Bilbo was like, fuck not, am I leaving Hobbiton? You know what I mean? And like Frodo,
and he gets tricked into it.
Yes, he gets
although
tricked.
In the movies that's changed, and they make it his choice to go on the trip, which I do think like is kind of narratively better.
It is.
I like that, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
But whereas in Lord of the Rings, Frodo does make the choice to go on this journey. And, you know, when we were talking before about this episode, you brought up the idea of the Chosen One. And I think Lord of the Rings specifically is such a subversion of that narrative of the Chosen One, which I think the Chosen One is kind of like an almost more modern fantasy take than fantasy that was being created in the time that Tolkien was writing this.
It's actually very old. It's like it like predates a lot of like,
well, I just mean like in terms of like contemporary literature, because you know this kind of book that Tolkien was writing wasn't being really written for adults at the time, and the chosen one idea does feel very like juvenile to me, because it's very something that like a young person in a story is grafted onto them, that they're the only person and who can like save the kingdom or like defeat the Dark Lord or whatever. And in Lord of the Rings, you know, Frodo isn't chosen.
Yeah.
He just like he inherits the ring and he makes the decision to go on this very arduous journey. And there's nothing like inherently good in him that helps him like defeat the bad guy. And actually, in the end, he gives in to the evil. He does not throw the ring into Mount Doom. He actually is going to keep it for himself, and it's only because Gollum attacks him that the ring ends up being destroyed.
On this whole show, you're so right as well. It's like such a spin on like the Chosen One narrative, because like dating back to literally the Bible, which is like maybe one of the OG like chosen narrative stories, a story that like maybe didn't, I don't think the Bible necessarily influenced a lot of Tolkien's work, even though a lot of Christians love to create allegories and like alignments between Lord of the Rings and the Bible. But like C.S. Lewis was very in her Bible zhuzh, and they were best friends. And so I think that.
Or more than friends.
I mean, do you think they were?
I think they at least jerked off together once.
They have definitely, pulled their padges in a dark room.
God, I hate that fucking phrase.
Pulling your padge.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were definitely circle jerking in a dark room together while, you know, reading a Song of Solomon, probably.
Yeah. Say Aslan when you come.
No, not Aslan. Aslan and Gandalf are kind of like
The Lion, the Witch, and the Astroglide. The Lion, the Witch, and the Boy Butter.
No, yeah, not Astroglide. Hopefully
The Lion, the Witch, and the Coconut Oil.
Gun oil. Oh, no. Anyways, I think that Tolkien and C.S. Lewis's relationship, I think, is actually very reflected in Lord of the Rings, particularly homoerotic, if not homosocial, if not homoerotic,
between Sam and Frodo?
Between all of the male characters.
Yeah.
Because let's get into that. I mean, you talk a lot about, I mean, you post a lot of fan art.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Lord of the Rings is gay down.
Because there are no women.
There's no women. And
Phoebe wants to know, producer Phoebe wants to know why there are no women.
Probably because Tolkien was like gay or scared of women.
Well,
or
they were writing this in the 30s when women basically didn't exist.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, and that's honestly, there's a kind of like lore within the Lord of the Rings that there are no female dwarfs and that dwarves just spring out of holes in the ground. And I think that that honestly is kind of indicative of how Tolkien was thinking about women, that they really just were the only service they provided was to reproduce.
And even the women that we think of when we think of Lord of the Rings, like in the books canonically, there are two women who actually appear in the plot, and that is Galadriel and Eowyn, because Arwen is only mentioned in the appendices.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And they only beefed up her roles for the movie because the scene where she rescues Frodo, that's a whole different character in the books.
Which I love.
And you know, Arwen was originally supposed to have a much bigger part in the second movie. She was supposed to be in the battle at Helm's Deep.
You broke that news to me when we watched together, and I'm so mad.
And I think, like, in some ways, it's kind – I understand the narrative choice because, especially in the second movie, we're supposed to understand the singularity of Eowyn as a female warrior. And, like, people of the time were like, well, we can't have two of them because then, like, people won't understand that. Yeah. And I guess it, like – it does maybe make it less impactful when in the third movie, Eowyn kills the Witch King of Angmar and says, I am no man. But also, like, there can be more than one woman
warrior.
They're
also just, unfortunately, just not very complex characters. Like, Eowyn and Arwen are kind of one and the same.
No, like, Arwen's whole arc is that, like, she is kind of badass in the first movie, and then the second movie she's like, oh, my heart's broken. I'm dying.
She literally spends both of those movies, like, laying in repose, like, in a gorgeous gown, being like, oh. They're like, am I going to be immortal or will I find love? Like,
and then she gives up her immortality for a man, for Viggo Mortensen. We've seen his dick. He has shown his dick on screen. I don't think she's getting anything special
out
of that.
And he's also famously short. He's very short. Did you know that?
I didn't know
that. He's extremely short. Wait, did they Photoshop him so that he was taller than Arwen? I actually don't remember him feeling shorter in the movies. They really played around with height in every way they could.
They did. There's lots of perspective, trickery in the Lord of the Rings films, thanks to Peter Jackson and the magic he created through these movies.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit nfl.com/schedule-release to learn more.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
To go back to this kind of like chosen one thing, you know, Aragorn is kind of a chosen one narrative. Frodo is kind of this, you know, there are a lot of different like ways wherein Tolkien, I think, was really a student of like the narrative, and he like was extremely literary. They were both Cambridge girls. And so they were, and like, you know, Tolkien was like a linguist. Like he literally took the languages very seriously and created literal full languages. It wasn't just kind of like a, oh, I just need four lines and I'm going to make up some things and
no,
that'll
no,
be
no.
it.
There is Elvish. He created a whole language. He also, you know, there's so much text. He not only wrote all of the appendices for Lord of the Rings, there's the Silmarillion, which tells the backstory of, you know, Sauron's rise to power and kind of all the mythology of Middle Earth. There's tons of short stories written in the world of Lord of the Rings. There's actually one which explains the backstory between Galadriel and Gandalf. Did you know that they used to fuck?
What?
Yes.
No.
Gandalf, when he used to be a Maiar, which are like the like kind of angelic beings that the wizards are when they're not in like human form, he and Galadriel used to be a thing like thousands and thousands of years ago.
No.
Yeah, but then when he finally like comes to Middle Earth in the form of Gandalf, she is married. And so they, you know, can't be together. And that's why I guess in the Hobbit movies, they have kind of a weird vibe.
Well, Gandalf, unfortunately, still feels pretty gay to me. Or maybe Ace.
Well, everyone's gay in
yeah,
these movies.
Everyone's gay. Yeah. Oh, wait.
Fool of a toque.
Wait, we need to
everyone
go back.
Everyone is gay.
Back to the homoeroticism of it all. We have, you know, you wrote some ships down.
I wrote
here.
Some ships down. So the big ones are Sam and Frodo, obviously. There's even, you should go search Lord of the Rings Secret Lovers on YouTube, because there's a TBS promo in which they like have edited it to look as though Lord of the Rings is a love story about Sam and Frodo. In the Hobbit trilogy, which, you know, is not good, but I definitely watched, Bilbo and Thorin very much have a vibe. There's lots of fan fiction about them. Legolas and Aragorn are kind of a thing. I personally am more interested in Legolas and Gimli.
I was going to say Legolas and Gimli. Legolas was...
There's lots of crouching down in that relationship. Let's just say that.
I'm sure they have, you know, maybe a step stool involved at some point. Legolas was really like the sexual awakening for so many fags and for myself. I had the hugest crush on Orlando Bloom as Legolas. To talk about that for a little bit, Legolas, this is so corny, but Legolas was like a kind of gender nonconforming kind of like, you know, girl.
Legolas yeah, is giving he, they.
Skirt, tights, wig, you know.
Or like, maybe Legolas is giving like in their Instagram bio, it's like any pronouns are fine.
Yeah. Yeah, any pronouns are right. Yeah, Legolas is giving that. All elves in general, I think, are kind of like their race and world seems to exist so much outside of Middle Earth, and like,
well,
they're
they
not
live
really
in forests.
Yes.
And then they like leave to go to
war.
To go to
Valhalla or something. Well,
something. They go to like basically heaven, but it's like not really heaven. It's just this like perfect world where the undying lands,
which is so uninteresting in terms of a writer's perspective. Like, there's nothing interesting to me about going to like a heaven place, and in my opinion, controversially, I think that the last 30 minutes of the third movie are extremely boring.
There's so many fake endings and the movie drags on. But, you know, the fact that the elves go somewhere did give us the best line of all the movies, which is when Galadriel says, "I pass the test. I will diminish and go into the West and remain Galadriel."
Ah, yes.
Which is my favorite meme of all time.
Yeah, it is.
The one that I post, like, 20 times a year.
Look, all shall love me in despair. Okay,
all babe? Shall love. That's my Twitter bio.
I know. It's actually a perfect Twitter bio for you, not going to lie.
Yes. Okay, so.
So, in terms of other queer coded characters in Lord of the Rings,
the Uruk-hai, which are the kind of bastardized orcs that Saruman creates.
He's bred to be killing machines.
Yes. They, I guess. Might be because they have a high pony.
They're definitely orinators. Okay. Yeah. The orcs were coming in with big swords and they were going,
yeah. We're going to get those hobbits. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just like imagining an orc like putting a third arrow into Boromir. Like,
just keep dying and dying and dying and dying.
We got there. We got there. Funny enough, the orcs were the only roles in the show outside of the main characters that were played by women. I think almost a third, they say, of the orcs in the movie franchise were played by women.
Love diversity and inclusion.
Representation matters for sure. Oh my God. Phoebe is dying in the booth hearing things about Tolkien for basically the first time because Phoebe's never seen the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And so read the book. So we're like contextualizing all of this and it's just bizarre out of context. I feel like growing up, I don't know if I really picked up on the homoeroticism of like these male friendships, but male homosocial friendships were the string that pulled a lot of
it's
these
a lot
relationships
of like,
together.
You are my brother.
Yes.
You know, that kind of vibe.
Yeah, and they like caress each other's cheek for like a fully holding.
Like, oh,
holding.
My friend. Yeah. I love you. Well, even when Boromir dies in Fellowship of the Ring, like, I mean, obviously he and Aragorn were fucking and sucking, you know, when the hobbits were sleeping at night.
That was a loss for sure. Also, there's some, like, incest afoot between, like, Boromir and Faramir
Faramir is so hot.
Faramir is maybe hottest next to Legolas.
And you know what I hate is that Eowyn is like, I'm this girl boss warrior, I kill the Witch King of Angmar, and then at the end she's like, oh, I'm gonna lay down my sword and marry Faramir.
That was so boring, so lazy.
Because Eowyn and Arwen obviously should have hooked up.
Yeah, absolutely. But like Eowyn falling in love with Faramir, like I don't think they even expanded on that in the extended edition. Like
it just happened.
This is what I'm saying. The last and 30 Eowyn minutes are so boring, which is why the second movie is the best movie.
And Eowyn, the second movie, absolutely. Two Towers is the best movie. Treebeard, are you kidding me?
Yes, absolutely.
Treebeard is giving Radical Fairy.
Also played by Jonathan Rhys-Davies, who played Gimli, who also played the elephant in my favorite childhood film, Cats Don't Dance. Get ready for that episode, by the way.
Oh, my God.
You are going to have to watch it.
I know. I'm not looking forward to it.
I would love to ask you if you thought Gandalf was gay. Because it was played by Ian McKellen, who is famously gay, but Sean Connery, who is famously not gay, did turn down the role.
I think Gandalf transcends sexuality.
So he's agender.
I think Gandalf is a trans elder.
Oh, I love that.
Trans elder.
An agender trans elder.
No.
Or
trans femme trans elder.
Okay.
Who is kind of like, I don't care about shaving anymore. You know?
She said, I do not have to present to you in a certain way.
Non-binary trans elder.
Non-binary people don't owe you androgyny.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Especially when she comes back as Gandalf the White with that lace.
Oh my God.
Like, what were the hair and makeup people on Lord of the Rings doing that people in current day movies cannot replicate? Like, we saw Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness last night, and Doctor Strange's hairline was so clocky.
The wigs were not right.
And then in fucking the 90s, we had people blending Gandalf edges like butter. It was melted.
I would love to talk about like watching the franchise in adulthood versus watching it as childhood, because I recently rewatched, and that was actually one of the things that I noticed was the way that Gandalf really was kind of queenie. Like, he loved a reveal, okay? Like, when he came up
absolutely.
And all like pretended to be Saruman just for the gag.
Just for the gag.
Just
to make an entrance.
And then he did it again when he went to not Helm's Deep, when he went to Rohan to find the poisoned king.
Do you think RuPaul would play Gandalf in a Lord of the Rings remake?
Shut the fuck up. Absolutely not. But like literally when he came to Rohan and he was, you know, trying to basically eradicate the poison from Theoden, Saruman was possessing him.
And like is giving Gandalf the gray.
Yes.
And then all like, of a sudden. You thought. Gandalf the white.
Yeah. Gandalf.
She brings it to you every ball.
She took off her cloak and she said, "Rakatitita, yeah, pussy bitch." Ooh, la 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 la. Zibol. And then, like you know, Aragorn and Legolas backup dance kind
of. It's like fool of a toque.
You were telling me that Ian McKellen turned down another role to do this, yeah?
Oh, yeah. So Ian McKellen did not play Dumbledore because he was like, well, I already played Gandalf, so like I'm not going to do another wizard moment.
Yeah, it would be way too repetitive. Like those are the two most famous elder wizards ever, aside from Merlin. You know what I mean? So like for one person to play all of them just would be not right.
I do love the battle between Saruman and Gandalf in Fellowship of the Rings, where they're just basically like grunting at each other. They're like with their staffs, they're like, huh!
Just like hours of footage that are just, welcome to Like a Virgin.
And then when she's like, Saruman is like spinning the staff, and then Gandalf goes up into the ceiling.
Yeah, that is actually.
And then like does a dip when he hits the roof.
I am by no means a gamer, but at the time I was a loser and had no friends. So the Lord of the Rings games, video games, are exceptional.
I didn't know they were video games.
Oh my god! Of course, they are all. I mean,
I'm not a video gamer in any way.
The Two Towers was kind of the first real video game to hit the market, and it was amazing. And then they really leveled up with Return of the King, which is definitely the best video game. But like, I'm just bringing it up because like the majority of you playing this game is like Gandalf and others just doing ha, hoo-ha, yeah, you know, like the entire time. And it never got old. Like I remember I like completed the Return of the King video game like 17 times in my childhood. I loved that video
game. I just searched Lord of the Rings Thunderpuss remix in YouTube and really upset. But you know what I was obsessed with? The song that Billy Boyd, who plays Pippin, sings. What is that
song? And that has a great remix.
It does.
Yes. Literally Google it. We should listen to it right now. It's an amazing club remix of Pippin's song.
Pippin's song, Edge of Night.
This is not the one that I was thinking of.
Okay, but I'm still feeling it, though.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay.
Well, that one's kind of postmodern.
I will be adding this to my Hot Girl Walk playlist.
Love that. Anyways, I did love that song as well. I will complain briefly that there are too many songs in general in the Lord of the Rings books. Too many songs, too many poems.
They love to sing a song. They love to say a riddle.
Things in rhyme, riddles. Oh, my God.
Riddle me this.
Oh, my God. The Hobbit is predominantly riddles. Like, it is.
Well, that's how in the original, you know, telling of The Hobbit, Gollum is much more of a sort of, like, tricksy character than an outright villain.
Yeah, but the riddles were like very like Snapple.
Riddles in the Dark.
They were
that's
very
the
like
name of that chapter.
Snapple bottle cap kind of riddles. Like
yeah,
very,
yeah, yeah, and then, totally.
But and then
or
the
like,
songs.
What would be on a popsicle?
The songs are giving very like Dove Secrets chocolate. Like I don't know. Like I just feel like a lot of the songs were very saccharine and did not move the plot at all. And very, just as a writer, from a writer's perspective, like, indulgent, and, like, Tolkien needed an editor. I'm sorry. Like, both of them needed editors. I think C.S. Lewis was better at editing himself because his books were, like, a little bit more for children. But, like, when they were sitting there, like, at the Eagle and the Child, the pub that they famously wrote, like, their books at together, they should have edited each other.
They're just like us, writing books in a fucking coffee shop.
In a fucking guy. Yeah. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis sitting at their laptops across from each other, each with iced oat lattes, being like, oh, yeah, I'm thinking that, like, maybe Gimli is going to have, like, an arc here. And then C.S. Lewis is like, yeah, that sounds great, bro.
And then, like, do you want to go in the bathroom and suck each other off?
hey, do you think that you could send this stuff to your agent? Like, oh, I don't have an agent, bro. Like, I'm sorry.
But, like, that is a kind of, like, you know, Hollywood
I wonder if there's behavior. C.S. Lewis, J.R.R. Tolkien, real person fan fiction.
Definitely. There's 1,000% is.
Yep, there is.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
Okay, one gripe I have with Lord of the Rings, which is, okay, first
aside
of all,
from the fact that there are no women.
Aside from the fact that there are no women. Okay, first of all, it's very gay. Lord of the Rings obviously is very gay. Everyone's fighting over a piece of jewelry. Mm-hmm. Love that.
Love that.
Love that.
They really want their
just
Tiffany.
Just go check out the Essence sale. There's like always 15%
off. Yeah,
some
Justine Clouquot.
But what the fuck does Sauron even want with the ring? Like, there's no like specification about what it's going to do when he gets it. It's just like he becomes more powerful.
That's kind of why Campbellian narratives are often very flat and like or especially when it's like in action, but like
It's a MacGuffin. It's like the same thing as like we always talk about with Marvel movies. It's like they spend the whole movie looking for this thing that like you don't even really get why they need it.
Yeah, the motivation is not necessarily there, and the villain is not that interesting because all he wants is power and immortality.
And like I guess it's not about the destination, it's about the journey.
It's about the journey, it really is. And the films are, like, the plots are really complex and yet extremely simple because they follow archetypes and...
I think it's a cock ring. I think Sauron is a huge cock. And the ring will adjust to
I was
going to
say, the ring famously adjusts to size.
And
so if you put it around
it
your
cock,
peen, that would actually be a really useful invention. Like a metal adjustable cock ring.
Okay, well, like, I feel like hobbits probably have a lot of orgies in Hobbiton.
Oh, for sure.
Also, we have said this on the podcast before. We need to go to New Zealand and go to Hobbiton. Someone needs to sponsor us to do this. We will do ads for whatever fucking New Zealand Board of Tourism anyone asks us to.
Are the borders even open in New Zealand yet?
I don't care.
Are they just like, are they holding Lord
Captor? You can put me in a barrel like the dwarves in The Hobbit and send me down the river. I just want to go to Hobbiton.
Yeah, and Lord will be there at the edges of the continent.
Oh my God,
welcome us.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, in
soil of power.
She's in full elven garb and she's like, oh I am.
Do you think Lord likes Lord of the Rings? Lord of
the Rings?
Rings?
I mean, she obviously... I think that Lord of the Rings has to be integral to New Zealand
like Kiwi culture, right? Like, yeah. They're probably inextricably linked. So I would imagine that she is a Lord of the Rings fan, but she famously only watches a few movies a year.
Has Laura ever uttered the words, fool of a toque?
No, she hasn't, unfortunately. But she has shushed a lot of people, which Gandalf does do.
Hush, shush, shush. Fool of a toque.
This is what the whole podcast has been.
just us making noises. I think Gandalf and Saruman are giving such X energy. Like,
yes!
They so obviously used to date, and there's a lot, and there was a bad breakup.
Yeah, and Gandalf, like, you know, like, really wants his, like, Joni Mitchell vinyl collection back.
Okay, I'm retracting my earlier statement. Oh, no. Here's what it is, bitch. Here's what it is. So okay. I was going to retract my statement that Gandalf was a like, trans elder, because I was going to say, like, no, Gandalf's gay because he and Sauron are exes. No, they were exes, and then Gandalf chose to live her truth and Saruman has been a bitter bitch about it. Ever since.
Yeah, it's giving homophobic. It's giving transphobic
gay. Oh my God, yeah, we just unlocked this, bitch.
How could you be transphobic and have a lace front like that? Like, come on. It's, like,
have you met any drag queens ever? Have you met RuPaul?
Well, RuPaul's lace front is so, I mean, the best lace front of money can buy.
Yes. Who's your favorite Lord of the Rings villain?
Probably the Witch King of Angmar. He was pretty sick from the first movie to the end.
We don't know their gender.
You're actually 100% right. Forgive me. I would say, in the words of Charlene, if you don't have any pronouns, I'm going to use the one that you look like. Oh, my God. That's not
if
true
If you
for
find
me,
that I'm a just, problematic statement, please don't follow
yeah,
Charlene
don't,
on Twitter.
Yeah, don't follow Charlene on Twitter. Anyways, I think they were a kind of transcendent villain that had so many different – it had, you know, an elevation onto the dragon that was really satiating. And Gollum, to me, got repetitive and annoying. Saruman was queeny but actually removed himself from a lot of the movie. He was supposed to be, I'm sure you know this, like a big part of the third film/book wherein even after Frodo destroys the ring, they have to go back to Isengard to fight Saruman and take over Isengard. But to me, like, yeah, the Witch King of Angmar is, like, maybe the most boss-ass bitch of the villains. What about you?
Well, I'm gonna actually throw out a little surprise here and let you know that maybe not my favorite, but I think in terms of performances, Benedict Cumberbatch as Smaug actually eats in the Hobbit trilogy.
I forgot that he did that.
We have not really touched on the Hobbit trilogy much because it's bad.
I think the first movie is actually really good.
Well, when you know the story behind the Hobbit trilogy, it's actually really sad the way it all went down.
And how so?
I would suggest, I'm going to give like a very like truncated explainer on this. And if you want something that's a little more in depth, I would really recommend watching Lindsay Ellis's trio of video essays about The Hobbit on YouTube. But basically, The Hobbit was initially supposed to be two movies directed by Guillermo del Toro, which would have been incredible.
Yeah.
And they were going to be much more, like, truer to the books. Like, they were going to be really, like, for children, like, have a distinctive visual style that was much more del Toro than it was Peter Jackson and Lord of the Rings. Mm. And then they had already done 2 years of pre-production on The Hobbit when Guillermo del Toro was fired.
Wow.
And they brought Peter Jackson in to take over the movies and make them much more stylistically in line with Lord of the Rings.
I didn't know that.
And to reference Lord of the Rings much more. Because, you know, there's in The Hobbit, there's a necromancer who, like, you find out is actually Sauron in disguise. Sauron. But, like, it's kind of just, like, an afterthought in the books. And, like, they make it such a big plot in the movies. And there's also a lot of stories about how, like, when they were shooting the films, like, It was originally supposed to be two, and then they made the decision to make them three, but it happened while the movies were already shooting. None of the cast ever knew, like, which movie the scene they were shooting was supposed to go in.
God.
A lot of the actors who played the dwarves were, like, really mistreated by the production company. And it actually, The Hobbit had this whole political controversy in which, like, labor laws were rewritten in New Zealand because of it.
Oh, my God.
It's just, like, it was a huge mess, and you can definitely feel it in those movies, which are like, the first one's pretty good. The second one is good because of Benedict Cumberbatch's Smaug. Mm. And if you go and look at any of the behind-the-scenes info of him doing the motion capture, like, it's obviously, like, kind of funny because he's crawling around on the floor, but, like, it's a good performance, and his scenes with Bilbo in the cavern are so good. And they have great chemistry. Obviously, like, anyone who's ever watched the BBC Sherlock knows that Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman have really good chemistry. But, yeah, he's just a really fun villain. And I wish that we had gotten to see Guillermo del Toro's version of The Hobbit. I also do love – there's an animated movie of The Hobbit that I watched a lot when I was a kid that I'm obsessed with.
I didn't watch that either.
There also similarly is an animated version of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe that I was obsessed with when I was a kid. Oh, my God.
So good.
The witch in that movie is Queen. So fucking fierce.
With her little skull cap.
So oh, yeah.
Okay.
We should do a Narnia episode, honestly.
Nar. Ugh, it's too wholesome. That's honestly, like, something that I resent for no logistical reason, only for a personal one, is that, like, Narnia and Middle-earth and the stories that come with them are extremely, like, family-friendly stories, like, because they were both very Christian and very Oxfordian and very, like, kind of conservative, like, there were no women, and there, yeah. And, you know, and I think that, like, I do think that the film franchise of The Lord of the Rings is, like, untouchable. Like, I would not change a thing about it, aside from the fact that it has no women and no people of
color.
But
that's also why we have Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Because the whole point of Game of Thrones is it's a deconstruction of these classical fantasy books where the women have no agency, mm-hmm. and everyone's, like really just and true, and, like, good triumphs over evil. And, you know, Game of Thrones is, like, such a subversion of that. And I think it's why it was so popular. But also, like, we wouldn't have that if Lord of the Rings hadn't paved the way for, you know, the mainstream success of fantasy. Because we also can't forget that these movies were huge box office successes and won, like, a trillion Oscars.
Yeah. They literally, the third movie tied for most Oscars ever awarded to a film with Titanic. And then after that, Avatar, I believe. But
can't wait for Avatar The Way of Water.
I know. Speaking of, like, future stuff and, like, what happens now to this franchise in mainstream media, Amazon is going to make a TV show about the stories of the Silmarillion, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be extremely tough for them to build a mythology without referencing Peter Jackson's work. Even though
it looks pretty stylistically different, and also, like, there's people of color and women in it.
I love that. Yeah, that'll matter enough to me. I
although it already has created a lot, it has unearthed a lot of really ugly racism online.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I'm not looking forward to what that, like, fuck. At least, thankfully, I'm not on the part of the internet where there's any discourse about that happening.
Yeah,
so,
thank God. Me too.
I won't see it.
Yeah, and
but it fucking sucks that it's happening. And, like, you all are fucking racist.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, Peter Jackson's, like, kind of greatest weakness was the level of detail in his textual awareness of the books. Like, he was a student of the appendices and, like, all the stories that came with the films. And even though the adaptation is as true as an adaptation can get in terms of trying to service the original fandom of the books, that ultimately gave us, you know, some of the problems that we're talking about now in terms of diverse casting. But also, yeah, like, story-wise, making it a little boring sometimes, because what we find entertaining in terms of plot and character in the 1930s is very different than what we find entertaining today.
Well, that's why I'm very interested to see what this new era of Lord of the Rings media looks like, telling different stories in that universe. And there is kind of a parallel to that happening with Game of Thrones, because, you know, right around the same time that the new Lord of the Rings show comes out, we're getting a new Game of Thrones series on HBO Max that similarly takes place in that universe, but a different time period. Mm-hmm. So I guess excited for this new era of, you know, looking at these legacy fantasy properties and finding ways to tell expanded, more inclusive, and maybe more interesting stories in familiar worlds.
Yeah, maybe grounded in a kind of contemporary sensibility more, you know? I think that...
So maybe we'll finally get to see someone eat a hobbit hole.
Yeah. Like, the most contemporary thing about the film franchise is maybe its sense of humor and how, you know, those jokes are still funny when we watch them now.
Fool of a Duke.
Yeah, exactly. Or, like, toss me! You know what I mean? Like, those are, like, moments that are still funny because the characters are built really nicely.
Yes.
But I don't
you
know.
You shall not... Pass!
Talk about transphobia.
Yeah.
I mean, but
that's Gandalf talking to herself.
That's what I was going to ask you. What does that mean in the context of her as a trans elder?
It's why she, you know, she's like, I'm going to give my life. I'm going to sacrifice my life for these hobbits and fight the Balrog. And it's okay because I'll never pass.
Yeah, because she's, the moan's not worth it.
Oh my God. We'll be back next week with a discussion on all things theme parks with Matt Rogers. Very excited to talk about Disney, Universal, Six Flags.
And I'll be the virgin because I've only really been to two theme parks. So,
yeah, so it's going to be quite a roller coaster.
If you will.
You can follow our Instagram at likeavirgin42069 for updates on future episodes. And, you know... Tag us in what you think we should talk about next, or you can slide into our DMs because we do check them.
You can also tweet, you can leave a suggestion as a review on Apple Podcasts, you know, a book, a show, a movie, a phenomenon. We want to hear from you.
And of course, the hotline is still open. You can call to confess at 323-PENANCE. That's 323-736-2623.
I'm your co-host, Fran Tirado. You can find me at FranSquishGo wherever you want on social.
And I'm Rose Domu. You can find me at Rose Domu wherever.
You can subscribe to Like a Virgin anywhere you listen. Leave us a rating on Spotify or a review on Apple Podcasts. Like a Virgin is an iHeartRadio production. Our producer is the Phoebe Unter, with support from Lindsay Hoffman, Julian Weller, Jess Krainchich, and Nikki Etor. Until next week, sayonara, virgins.
I pass the test. I will diminish and go into the West. And remain.
Let it be.
Galadriel.
And then there'd have to be slow, quiet tamarines. And she would kind of chant. And she chants a little more.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.